Hello, and welcome to Wiki Politiki, a show designed to bring right and left front and center, to turn the funk into function, and leave the junk at the junction. At a time when so much political discourse is heat without light, Wiki Politiki shines the light of love and truth on the endarkened corridors of power, and then brings leading solutionaries into conversation to light the way forward together. Your host is Steve Behrman, author, comedian, and political and spiritual uncommentator. You might know Steve as his cosmic comic alter ego, Swami Beyond Ananda, or as the author of a more serious book with cellular biologist Bruce Lipton, Spontaneous Evolution. If you recognize that crisis precipitates evolution, and judging by the current crises, the chances of precipitation are 100%, this show is for you. Welcome to the Evolutionary Upwising. Now, here is your host, Steve Behrman.
Well, hi there. Welcome to Wiki Politiki, Conversations for Co-Creation, where we shed light on the endarkened corridors of power, and we shine light ahead of us to where evolution is leading. The purpose of Wiki Politiki is to bring left and right, front and center, to face the music and dance together, to address problems instead of defending positions. Well, you know, it's hard to believe that it's been nearly 3 years since I did my first Wiki Politiki radio show, an interview with my associate and friend, cellular biologist Bruce Lipton. Our interview was about conscious evolution as the alternative to mass extinction, and believe me, it's even more relevant today than it was then. The current administration has brought us closer to our own species, topping the endangered species list, as it makes a great leap backward toward feudalism. On the other hand, the best Democrats can promise is that they are not Donald Trump. Their corporate agenda, however, cloaked in nice-sounding language and representing the dominance of technology, is leading us forward to a brave new world of neo-feudalism. Well, fortunately, there is an awakening happening on both sides, and a growing movement from what I'm calling the sane and sacred center that is calling on us to work together to collaborate for the betterment of each and all. And yeah, that sounds like an ideal, but unless the ideal becomes the real deal, there will be no deal at all. It's a clear-cut binary choice, a life economy or a death economy, an awakening or awake. Today's conversation is about the signs of the uprising, the cues and clues that we are indeed awakening, and I'll be offering ideas for how we might awaken in time and use our goodwill, our knowledge, our wisdom, and our technology to bring back the missing piece in government of, by, and for the people. And yes, I will be talking to myself. I'll be interviewing me, somebody I've known my entire life, and speaking to you in a way that I hope informs, inspires, and activates. So my first question for myself is, Steve, what have you learned from doing this show for nearly 3 years? Well, thank you for that question. First, I've learned that in spite of the divisions, we have a deeply united body politic. More than 90% of Americans believe our system isn't working, that there's too much money in politics, and that neither political party truly represents their interests or the interests of the Commonwealth, as opposed to the uncommonly wealthy. Secondly, I've interviewed countless evolutionaries and solutionaries who happen to have key pieces to the puzzle, but because of the media monopoly, determined to keep the current system in place and determined to keep us arguing with one another rather than cooperating and collaborating, most people out there have never heard of these new solutions. For example, one of my favorite interviews was with the financial planner Scott Smith. And he has something called the Financial Freedom Act. Scott Smith was he's been in the financial industry for decades. He helped heal this country after the SNL crisis. He was engaged by Nelson Mandela to help design the banking system in South Africa when they gained their independence. And for the past 20 years, he's been working on this Financial Freedom Act, which would eliminate the income tax, which would allow us to pay off our national debt, meet our financial obligations, give every American a stipend of $25,000 a year, and would provide health care for all. And what it would do is, instead of using the current taxing system, it would tax digital financial transactions, a very small percentage of these transactions. But nonetheless, we would generate $15 trillion, three times what we're generating now. Now, we haven't heard about this because this actually interferes with the system as it is. But as I'm suggesting, one of the things I've learned through WikiPolitiki, and one of the heartening things that I've learned, is that people are ready, willing, and able to embrace these new solutions once we're able to gather together outside the influence of mainstream media, corporations, the government. So I will be talking more about that. So despite the disheartenment in the heartland, which is manifest during this very toxic electoral season, I'm encouraged because the various truth movements and the great uprising taking place in this country and across the globe is awakening more and more people. And as we're finding, the more people who awaken, the harder it is to go back to sleep. And the more our mainstream media and our government censors information that conflicts with the mainstream narrative, the more people will become curious about it, the more people will embrace these ideas and begin to think for themselves. Gil Scott-Heron, back in the 60s, the great jazz musician, said the revolution will not be televised. Well, it's up to us to make sure that the evolution is. Okay, Steve, another question. Is it true that you were a political science major? And if so, what did you learn from political science? Well, okay, I have to clarify. I was indeed a political science major at Brooklyn College in New York, but I never got so far in the field as to actually dissect a politician. Never got quite that far. However, political science led me to my first amazing assignment in Washington, D.C. in the late 1960s as a teacher in the Urban Teaching Corps at an inner city high school in Washington, D.C. It was part of my graduate program at Antioch Putney Graduate School of Education. And in my first year in Washington, D.C., 1967-68, I was exposed to two very key outside-the-box ideas that I was able to understand and embrace, and they've been part of me ever since. The first was a unit that I was given to teach as part of my curriculum. Larry Cuban, who was director of this Urban Teaching Corps, developed a curriculum piece for my history class on alternative views of the Kennedy assassination. Now, this is 1967, just 4 years after the Kennedy assassination, and I am teaching alternative views. I'm teaching the work of Mark Lane and a number of other people who questioned the official Warren report. And as I immersed myself in this, I recognized that what I was reading made a heck of a lot sense, more sense than what the official narrative was. And so for more than 50 years now, I have held firm to the belief that regardless of who actually did do the shooting, the official story is bogus. Now, the second thing that I got my first year at Antioch Putney, my first year teaching, one of my fellow student interns at Antioch was a libertarian conservative, and he introduced me to the Bilderberg. Now, I don't know if you're familiar with the Bilderberg, but the Bilderberg represents the meeting every year of the global elites, the great business leaders, and it's been a place where a lot of the real decisions get made. This has been going on for more than 50 years. The first meeting was in Switzerland and in Bilderberg, hence the name Bilderberg. And what I learned, I learned about this outside the government influencer that ends up influencing both political parties. So for more than 50 years out of my political science education and out of my amazing experience at Antioch Putney in Washington, D.C. during the height of the student rebellion, et cetera, the March on Washington, the March on the Pentagon, all of these things, I learned two things that I think have allowed me to get a perspective on partisan politics ever since. I also learned through political science three meta principles. And again, what happens in our political system and political narrative and discourse is that we tend to get pulled into this binary puppet show narrative, partisan politics. And the more we recognize that it's not what we think it is. When I was a kid, one of my favorite writers was H. Allen Smith. Maybe people have never heard of him, but he was a humorous writer back in the 40s and 50s and 60s. And so he was talking about his childhood. He was born in the early 1900s and grew up in a small town in southern Illinois. And as a boy, he remembers going down to the town square. And this is a classic scene out of rural Americana. All of the guys sitting around outside the general store, and some city slicker comes by with the shell game, right? And so he has everybody mesmerized with the shell game. And H. Allen Smith, who at this point, I'm guessing he's maybe 7 or 8 or 9 years old, is watching this, watching people try to guess which shell the pea is under. And at some point he blurts out, "Maybe it isn't under any of them." And there was silence. And all of a sudden, the trance was broken, and the city slicker hurriedly gathered his shell and his pea and left, and the trance was busted. Maybe it's not under any of them. And so more and more Americans are now waking up to the shell game that is mainstream politics. And so when we wake up to the shell game, we start to look at what I call metapolitics, the bigger picture. And there are three principles I learned in political science that helps educate us and give us perspective on this bigger picture. The first one is something that Lord Acton, British Lord Acton, said more than 100 years ago. He said, "Power corrupts and absolute power corrupts absolutely." And this is why when the founders of this country wrote the Constitution, they created the balance of powers. They recognized that they didn't want any branch of government to become too powerful, because that would enable them to essentially use power in a unmitigated and unchecked way. Now, of course, as we see, we'll talk about this a little later, I think, as we see, the power of money now overwhelms all of the other powers. I think a senator running for re-election has to raise about $5,000 a day for 6 years. Now, doing that, he's going to have to go to the people who have money and resource, and they're going to want to have something in exchange. So power corrupts, absolute power corrupts, absolutely. Another principle, cui bono. Who benefits? Who benefits? So when we looked at the 9/11 attacks, we looked at the Kennedy assassination and all of these things that people who've questioned them have been relegated to the category of conspiracy theorists. When you ask the question, who benefited? Who benefited from the Kennedy assassination? Who benefited from the 9/11 attacks? Particularly noticing that it was used to create the so-called USA Patriot Act, repression against the American people, and bring us to war not just in Iraq, but to not just to Afghanistan, but the war in Iraq. And the final principle from that I learned in political science, it's actually a very unprincipled principle. It's the principle of divide and conquer, the oldest game in the land, the oldest game in history. It was used by the Romans and with their conquered people. When the Belgians came to the Congo, they made sure that the people were divided into the Hutus and the Tutsis, even though there wasn't any real difference between the two people. They were set to fight amongst one another. And we're seeing divide and conquer as a way that the culture wars of the 1960s have been weaponized to the point where we have two completely polarized opposite sides that have demonized one another and who are essentially prohibited from having sane and reverent and respectful conversations via the mainstream media. And so we have been divided into these two tribes so that we have not been allowed to unite and prevail around the virtues and values that the 90% of us who are not sociopaths have in common. And I'm telling you, there's good news on the horizon, even if we don't see it right now. As this great uprising continues, people wake up to how we've been divided and conquered. Wake up to the illusion of separation. Wise up to the power of love, coherence, and unity. I think we need to take a break. We're going to take a very short break. We'll be back after these messages with Wiki Politiki, where I'm talking to myself, but hopefully people are listening.
Connecting you with the best of the conscious minds in the world. Om Times Radio. IOM FM. Om Times Magazine is one of the leading online content providers of positivity, wellness, and personal empowerment. A philanthropic organization, their net proceeds are funneled to support worldwide charity initiatives via Humanity Healing International. Through their commitment to creating community and providing conscious content, they aspire to uplift humanity on a global scale. Om Times, co-creating a more conscious lifestyle.
My name is Victor Furman. Some call me The Voice. I've always been fascinated with human nature, spirituality, science, and the crossroads at which they meet. Join me Wednesdays at 8 p.m. Eastern on Om Times Radio, and we'll explore these topics and so much more on Destination Unlimited.
A social distancing tip.
While the CDC urges you to avoid close contact, like hugging or shaking hands, there are other non-physical ways to say hello. Wave, wink, use sign language, salute, smile, give the peace sign, throw up an air high five, do jazz hands. Remember, stay a minimum of 6 feet or 2 arms length away from others, and stay home if you can. For more info, visit coronavirus.gov.
Let's all do our part, because we're all hashtag alone together. Brought to you by the Ad Council.
Okay, Steve Behrman, I'm back talking to myself. I love that social distancing tip. My social distancing tip, radio, key for social distancing. You can hear me, but I'm not breathing on you. Okay, you have another question for me, Steve? Yes, I do. In your view, how did we get where we are today, where we have a president who is a pathological liar and a media that cannot be trusted? Well, as part of my background in political science, I've also looked at what I would call deep history. And if you look at deep history, beyond the beings and doings of year by year, you begin to look at certain trends. And if we look at the history of humankind, we see that humans have not been kind, particularly in the 5,000-year history of our so-called civilization. We've lived by the rule of the lowest common denominator, that is, dominate or be dominated. Now, the founding fathers of this country, as flawed as they were, and again, I would certainly acknowledge that, many were slave owners, many help decimate the native people of this country. But it's very important to recognize how fundamentally, radically different the Declaration of Independence was from any other document offering rights to people. The Declaration of Independence was influenced by the native peoples of this new continent, of the New World. And the whole idea of inalienable rights, these are rights that were not given by the king, but these are rights that arise from being alive, the same right that the grass has to grow. And this was influenced, as Bruce Lipton and I talk about in Spontaneous Evolution, greatly influenced by two things. First, by the native peoples of this country and the Iroquois Confederacy, and also influenced by perennial wisdom like the Rosicrucians, the Masons, and other esoteric spiritual pathways. As flawed as they were, they recognized, they set out that the sovereign of this country is the people of this country. Instead of a king, instead of the rights being given to us by a king, we have been given the rights essentially by natural law, by nature, by God. And remember that the American Revolution was fought against the first multinational corporation in our history, the British East India Company, which was in cahoots with the British military. So it had the backing of the military, and yet it was an exploitive entity. And so in fighting and finally prevailing over this entity, we got our political freedom. However, our economic freedom has always been in jeopardy. If we look to 1886, a very significant thing happened. A court clerk who was really in the employ of the railroad companies, but was doubling as a court clerk, wrote the front notes to a Supreme Court decision in 1886. And even though the Supreme Court decision said nothing of the kind, he wrote in the front notes that this guaranteed the rights of persons to corporate entities. And even though the Supreme Court decision said nothing of the kind, it became precedential law. And so for the past 125 years or so, corporate entities, which are non-living entities that have no other imprimatur but to make money for their owners and shareholders, in other words, they're sociopathogenic. These sociopathic entities have been given the rights of human beings with none of the responsibilities. So we have seen this in the battle for our hearts and minds and our political system, the economic forces of too much money, they have prevailed to the point where our political system is totally corrupted and influenced by these moneyed forces. If you look at history, you'll see that these anti-democratic forces have influenced both political parties. For example, the Federal Reserve Bill was first brought up by Republican Senator Nelson Aldrich in 1912, but it was defeated. And so through the back door, they got to Democrat President Woodrow Wilson, who passed it, who made sure that it passed during a Christmas recess in 1913. And Wilson later said it was the worst decision that he ever made, that he regretted it ever since. We've also seen that during the 1990s, Reaganism was institutionalized by the Clinton administration, and the Democrats have become simply another corporate party, you know, with better sounding language. But throughout recent American history of the past 100 years, we've seen us move through one perpetration after another. For example, raise your hands out there if you've heard about the business plot. Raise your hands. when I see a show of hands. I'm not seeing a lot of hands. Well, you could look it up. Even Wikipedia has an entry on it. The Business Plot, 1933. Executives from several corporations essentially created a plot to overthrow Franklin D. Roosevelt and install a military dictator instead. And they chose the most decorated Marine at that time, General Smedley Butler. However, General Butler, being a true patriot, you can look him up, Smedley Butler. He also wrote a document called War is a Racket, by the way. He blew the whistle on that plot, and the plot didn't happen. Didn't happen. So, again, grace prevailed, and that plot didn't happen. In 1944, however, another plot did manifest, and this was the Democratic Convention, 1944. Franklin Roosevelt's vice president, 1940, was Henry Wallace, one of the most forward-thinking, progressive, wise leaders we have ever had in this country. And he was FDR's choice in 1944. But by 1944, FDR was pretty much close to dying. He was very physically weak, unable to attend the Democratic Convention. And nonetheless, Wallace was his choice. While at the convention, the nefarious forces in the Democratic Party, in fact, some of the same forces that created the business plot, installed Harry Truman instead, who was much easier to manipulate and would make the world safe for the military-industrial complex. After World War II, how many people have heard of Project Paperclip? Go look up Project Paperclip. That's where we adopted the Nazi scientists, brought them in despite their any war crimes they might have committed. We didn't quite get Joseph Mengele. We didn't get him. He got to escape. But there are many others who had questionable records during Nazism. We brought them here. And we also brought them here to teach us some of the psychological warfare techniques that were used. And these were adopted by the newly created Central Intelligence Agency. And there was an Orwellian moment. I think it was in 1947. This is where we switched into the Orwell communications. And that's when we changed the Department of War to Department of Defense. And we essentially created a secret government that's been in power ever since. Then we've seen the Kennedy assassination, the Martin Luther King assassination, each of these perpetrations taking us, you know, creating more political PTSD in the body politic, enabling us to be so weakened and so distorted and so distressed that we could possibly choose a president like Donald Trump. Then there was a Powell memorandum. This is something that happened out of the Nixon administration. Powell later became a Supreme Court Justice, Lewis Powell. He was a tobacco company lawyer, which gives you an indication of, you know, what his training and background was. And after, during the Nixon administration, after the Environmental Protection Act was passed, and there were regulations that were regulating our business enterprises, Lewis Powell wrote the Powell Memorandum and presented it to chambers of commerce around the country, warning them of the dangers of regulation and creating think tanks and other propaganda apparatus to make sure that we defeated, collectively defeated these moves to regulate. It took less than 10 years. And by 1980, America elected Ronald Reagan, who was the his symbolic act as soon as he became president was to remove the solar panels that Jimmy Carter had put up at the White House. And he began to essentially promote trickle-down economics and promote the idea that the government is our enemy, when in fact the government, as was designed by the Constitution and the preamble to the Constitution, helps protect us against our the evil powers from within, including undue corporate influence. Since that time, we've had 9/11 and the Patriot Act, the Iraq War. The Democrats have become the other corporate party and a mainstream media that is not trustworthy and that has often lied to us through omission. So that's what's happened. That's how we've ended up where we are today with disheartenment and the heartland. So now the next question I'm going to ask myself is, what do we do about it? Well, I like to use the term the great uprising because I like the idea of waking up and wising up. Wake up to the illusion of separation. Wake up to how we have been divided and conquered so that we have not been able to gather around the virtues and values that the 90% of us who are not sociopaths have in common and hold our governance accountable to the rules of justice, transparency, honesty, and fair play. So the way we have it right now is that we have been divided and conquered. We have two separate polarized, I would call them silos of belief. And these have become more and more and more isolated from one another as the mainstream media and also much of the internet media stokes whatever it is that separates us. And so consequently, we're very easily able to see the shadow of the other side and then vote for the lesser evil as we perceive it. Looking back to the 2016 election, I traveled around the country. The question most people were asking each other was, so, who are you voting against? And that's exactly what we had. We had voting against the other side's evil rather than voting for a common good. So once again, what do we do about it? We need to recognize the meta view, the three principles that I just mentioned. Power corrupts and absolute power corrupts absolutely. And begin to notice that we have the absolute power of money overriding the power of the people until now. Number two, recognize divide and conquer, that as long as people are fighting one another, they are not able to hold the system accountable. And the sociopathogens in the system have full reign. Finally, cui bono. Who benefits? If you're looking at these seemingly random political events and the coincidence theorists will go, wow, what a coincidence, you can begin to recognize the patterns of how this political system is dominated from outside and how the system, in fact, one of the great revelations over the past couple of years in the various books written about Facebook and Google and the other social media is about how they have essentially captured us, corporate capture. They have captured everything about us. They know more about us than we know about ourselves. They're able to play our own sensibilities back to us and manipulate us through the media to adopt whatever views they want us to adopt. So the antidote to divide and conquer is unite and prevail. I'm calling the 2020s the decade of the citizen because that's the evolution of revolution. My good associate and friend, Joseph McCormick, transpartisan pioneer, conservative transpartisan activist, wrote in our little ebook, Reuniting America, he wrote that this is the evolution of revolution. In the past, revolutions were led by usually a strong leader, strong military leader. We can think of George Washington. We can think of people like that. In the 20th century, we began to see a different kind of revolutionary leader, a revolutionary leader with moral authority, like Gandhi, like Martin Luther King, like the Dalai Lama, like Nelson Mandela, that had a moral imprimatur, but yet it was still a movement where one person was the focal point. However, in this next decade, we are going to be seeing the evolution of revolution to the point where we recognize that the missing piece in government of, by, and for the people is the people. And we find ways to express our will and our authority by speaking together and acting together and recognizing that the system will not be changed by any individual and politician, only by the awakened awareness of a citizen's uprising, where we wake up to how we've been divided and conquered, wise up to how we can unite and prevail, grow up to become educated, wise, and conscious citizens, and show up on a new playing field, ready to play a new game, instead of dominate or be dominated, playing the game of collaboration, cooperation. We're all in this together, and we all ourselves in the same body politic, working for the betterment of each and all, and where individual freedom and communal connection go hand in hand. The paradox is that the more connected we are, the more free we are. I'll explain that once we get back from this break. This is Steve Behrman on Wiki Politiki.
Free your mind with Om Times Radio, IOM FM.
Ascending Hearts is no ordinary dating site, but a spiritual dating site with a purpose, to link you with your soulmate. We engineer the serendipity so you can trust that you will attune with someone that has the same matching vibration as you. Ascending Hearts, the conscious dating site for the spiritually aware. Try Ascending Hearts for free, ascendinghearts.com.
More than 24 million Americans have an autoimmune disorder, and that number continues to grow. I'm Sharon Saylor, and I'm one of those 24 million. To put that number in perspective, cancer affects about 9 million and heart disease up to 22 million. That's why I've brought together top experts and those thriving regardless of their diagnosis to bring you the latest, most up-to-date information. Join me, Sharon Saylor, Friday night, 7 p.m. Eastern, for the Autoimmune Hour on Life Interrupted Radio to find out how to live your life uninterrupted.
911, what is your emergency?
My kid shot himself.
All right, where's the wounds?
911, what's your emergency?
Please help my son shot his brother.
911, what is your emergency?
Okay.
911, please state your emergency.
Every day, 8 kids and teens are unintentionally killed or injured by loaded and unlocked guns.
It wasn't locked.
Learn how to make your home safer at endfamilyfire.org. Brought to you by the Ad Council and End Family Fire.
Okay, we're back on Wiki Politiki for our final session here, final segment. We're talking about what can we do about it? What can we do about the divide and conquer? What can we do about being disenfranchised? First of all, we can accept the legacy of the Declaration of Independence, that we the people are the sovereign ruler of this country. And now finally, we can embrace and accept this legacy as we update to Freedom of Assembly 3.0 and a system, an ecosystem for civic engagement. Go back, if you missed it, and listen to my show. Last week, I was interviewing Richard Lang, who is author of a book called Virtual Country, who has a brilliant idea that will extend freedom of assembly, that will make it relevant for our time. Freedom of Assembly 3.0. A new and independent institution of society. Imagine National Town Square, an independent institution, independent of government, corporations, advertising, and mainstream media, where every citizen has an account where they have a verifiable, as authenticated as your bank card, a verifiable voice and vote. Imagine that. Where 100 million or 150 million Americans can say, we want this, and speak in one coherent voice and have it be an authenticated vote. No bots, no imaginary people, no trolls, only real people. Only real people who are registered voters. And then all of a sudden we have an advisory branch of government that lets our leaders know where the American people are, and even more importantly, lets the American people know where we stand together. And all of a sudden, we're able to shift from this externally manipulated public opinion to public will, which we gather together and assert as an educated, coherent body politic. Very interesting. Now imagine a new reality show that's really about reality. Imagine Zoom conversations across political, social, racial, and economic lines that take our attention away from identity issues and focus on solving the identical issues we all share. What all humans have in common: clean air, clean water, clean food, clean government. Then imagine citizens gathering in collaborative clusters and wikis, where citizens from across the political spectrum can share information, learn from one another, come up with functional solutions together, cooperate, collaborate, and then present these solutions to our legislators, just as corporations and other special interests write legislation right now. We have a fully operative and independent advisory branch of government, and when Americans, let's say 100 or 150 million of us, speak in one coherent voice, the legislators will have to listen. Okay, well, that's fine and good, but what do we do right now in the face of this toxic and divisive election? Well, you know, interestingly, this has been presented as a do-or-die election by both sides. On the conservative side, I've got good friends and colleagues who are opposed to mandatory vaccination, who support medical choice and freedom, and they've noted that it's the Democrat governors who support mandatory vaccination, like in California, where there are no more exemptions for religion or any other objections, and every child going to public schools, and I believe private schools as well, has to be vaccinated. And it's not like when we were kids, there's dozens and dozens and dozens of vaccinations, and there's no way of knowing the value of all of these. It's a long conversation that we're not going to go into right now. But nonetheless, the people I know on that side are saying that for them, this is a life or death situation. We have to vote Republican in this election in order to preserve our medical freedom, because they imagine, and again, with Donald Trump, anything of any benefit would have to be on the level of imagination. They're imagining that Donald Trump will preserve those freedoms. Now, I happen to support medical choice myself. And in fact, John Robbins, the author of Diet for a New America and a progressive activist, has created a progressive manifesto so that Democrats can also be counted as being in favor of medical choice. However, in this or that election, one of those two people will become president. It'll either be Joe Biden or Donald Trump. And because of who Donald Trump is, back in 2016, Jonah Goldman, a conservative columnist, in becoming one of the Never Trumpers, said, "Character is destiny." And obviously, lack of character is destiny, too. Those who have the eyes to see it and are not deluded by their imagination or by QAnon, they recognize Donald Trump as a sociopathic con man, mobster wannabe who's already flouted the rule of law and is determined to operate as a law unto himself. And it's important to recognize, sad as it seems, that the Republicans, that Donald Trump represents what the Republicans have become. I repeat, what they've become. Real Republicans like Abraham Lincoln, Teddy Roosevelt, Dwight Eisenhower, and even Barry Goldwater would be flipping in their crypts if they knew what the Republicans are now. My joke that isn't that funny is that we have two political parties, the Democratic Party and the Undemocratic Party. So keep in mind that the Republicans are the party of the Southern strategy. 1965, when the Civil Rights Act, Voting Rights Act was passed, LBJ turned to his young assistant, Bill Moyers, and said, in signing this, I am giving the South to the Republican Party for the next two generations. And indeed, that's been the case. Ever since the Nixon era, the Republicans have been the party of racism. Second, the Powell Memorandum. I talked about that earlier. Number three, Reaganism and trickle-down economics. Trickle-down meaning that the people at the bottom are peons, if you know what I mean. They've given us Watergate and Iran-Contra. They've given us what I call selfish righteousness, where somehow narrow-minded religious fundamentalism and godless immorality of Ayn Rand go together. Somehow they work together. They've given us dirty tricks, as with Lee Atwater and Karl Rove. They've given us meanness, Newt Gingrich. They've given us the unitary executive, the idea that Dick Cheney formulated, essentially, that Donald Trump is now embodying. They've given us destruction of the natural world and the externalization of those costs. They've given us fear and hatred of the feminine and of, quote-unquote, the other. They've stolen elections in 2000 and 2004. They've given us racist dog whistles, fomenting civil war, and voter repression. Now, I can make as long a list about what the Democrats have done, but clearly, I think we need to address the two-party system one party at a time. So my suggested strategy is a two-step program, which fortunately works six times faster than 12-step. Step one, de-elect the misleader. De-elect the misleader. Make sure that this current sociopathogen is defeated by such a resounding majority that the entire Republican Party is put into disarray and it has to reconsider who it is and what it stands for. And of course, there could be no question that this election was stolen, that it's such an overwhelming victory. So that's the first step. The immune system, the T cells of the body politic, we need to activate our immune system and vote out the sociopathogen called the Republican Party so that we can take on the sociopathogen called the Democratic Party and the technocracy elite. So the second step is to gather together as one coherent body to hold the new government accountable. In establishing this new institution called the National Town Square Advisory Voting, in creating a national conversation where individual people from all sides can converse and rehumanize with one another, in using the sources and resources that we already have that would allow Americans from across the political spectrum to collaborate on better policy ideas that include and transcend both the current progressive and conservative ideas, and then become an advisory branch of government to our rulers. That is what the 2020s is going to be about if we are to survive as a species. So, I mean, I see the current system as two gangs, the sharks and the jets. Yeah, we all know who the sharks are. The sharks are the people that that rob, steal, sociopaths, you know, explore, devour everything in their path. The jets are a little trickier. These are the jet setters who speak a good line, but are essentially just the other part of the system that has been destroying the planet and exploiting other people. Consider that we have what somebody has termed a philanthropic industrial complex, and all of the well-meaning organizations that are looking to mitigate all of these problems on the planet without really addressing the institutions that are causing these problems, because that's who's funding them. That's who's funding them. I mean, if you look at how was the Rockefeller Foundation used in its early days? It was used to support the American Medical Association. The American Medical Association was used to deplatform other medical systems like homeopathy and natural medicine, so that the drugs, which were based on fossil fuels, which were owned by the Rockefellers, would prevail. So we've had this, the other side of the blatant evil has been the power of let's treat the problems caused by the system without looking at the system itself. If you watched the debates last summer, Marianne Williamson actually brought this up. She was the only one to bring it up, and she was talking about healthcare. And she said, why don't we really address what it is that's causing all of these diseases? You know, rather than, wear a pink ribbon for breast cancer, let's look at the environmental factors, including genetically modified food, including electromagnetic pollution, including the destruction of our soil through chemical farming, including the actual pharmaceuticals that we take ourselves that are toxifying us, and address those at the level of cause rather than look at how to clean up the mess after it's been made. So more and more and more, finally, we're beginning to see that these two sides need to be overgrown with an entirely new approach, a new holistic system that rebuilds our system from the grassroots up. What we need right now is what I'm calling heartland security, because our true security is in the land of the heart, meaning that the missing piece in our system has been a sane and sacred center at the middle of American politics. We don't have a religious or spiritual or sacred organizing idea. And yet, as more and more people are coming to recognize, there is a sense of sacred that transcends both religion and non-religion that may not have the language and the words, but we all understand the power of love. We all understand what love is. We've all felt that. And so the first thing that needs to do in healing the body politic, in creating heartland security, is to create this sense of sacred center at the center of who we are. Maybe what we need in this next 4 years of transition is an actual inquiry, a national conversation about our purpose. What is our purpose as a country? What is the gift that we are given to the world? What is it that we're here to do and give and bring that will be of benefit to all? And how can we cohere around that as an organizing principle? Then we need to focus on land, heart, land security, weaving ourselves back into the web of life by healing our soil, by cleaning our water, by depolluting our air, by planting trees. And, thank you, Donald Trump, for being part of this planting trillions of trees around the world. That is a very important piece, and I'm glad that Donald Trump has signed on to that. And then finally, heartland security, recognizing that our security is in our community. And that, as Bruce Lipton tells us, the next phase of human evolution is recognizing that we're all cells in a superorganism called humanity, and that by working together for the benefit of each and all, by creating community, we actually create greater freedom, because our energy is freed up to collaborate together rather than fighting one another. And once that realization, once a critical mass of the uncritical masses recognize that better together is not simply a shallow slogan, but actually a new operating system for our species, then we will have this great evolutionary uprising, and this country can once again become the world leader in bringing a true new paradigm of government of the people, by the people, for the people, where the government does our bidding, not the bidding of the highest bidder. Well, it looks like we're out of time on WikiPolitiki and this session. We'll be back with a guest next week. I suggest you go look at our archives and see which of these shows you're going to get the most out of. This is Steve Behrman, WikiPolitiki. I'll be with you again next week. Goodbye.